You are listening to WRUU Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM and WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I am so excited to have you with us today. I have my guest, Cameron Huffman, with me here. She is a devoted single mother of four. She's a volunteer coach for Girls on the Run. She's a Savannah native. She's a regional pharmacy manager, excuse me. She's an Aries. She's a beach lover. She's a runner. She's a travel ball mom. She's a sister. She's a new aunt. She's a daughter. And she's a superwoman. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Thanks so much for having me, Christy.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us today. How's it going?
It's good. Yeah.
Good.
Happy Friday.
I know Cameron was saying this is her first time doing something like this. So that's pretty exciting.
Very first time.
But you know what? I started the show and I was telling Cameron this earlier that it's really, the show is for showcasing the beautiful people in our community that are doing above and beyond what a lot of us are doing. And I believe that people like you, Cameron, that come on, I always say you make it look easy with the four kids that you have. I know it's not easy, but your attitude, the way you show up, the joy in your kids' faces when I see them, you have such a beautiful life and a beautiful family. So I wanted to bring you on today specifically to showcase all the good things that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're the light of my life.
They're beautiful. So before we talk about your kids, I want to talk a little bit about your name. Do you know what your name means?
I don't, actually.
Okay. Your name means strength and independence. It also means protector and nurturer.
Kind of fits.
I think it does, too. And I wanted to ask you about having a unisex name. What has that been like throughout your life? Share a little bit about that with us.
Oh, that's so funny. Yes, I used to joke that when I was in high school and college, I was the only Cameron, female Cameron, that I knew. And it actually has become more popular for little girls lately. It's spelled a little bit differently than mine a lot of times. They throw a Y in there for a lot of girls, but I actually liked having a different name. At first, you know, when you're little, it was frustrating when you go to the gas station and there's no keychain that says Cameron, right? Yes, it sounds silly, but mm-hmm. My sisters are Mallory and Jessica, and they both have keychains with their names on them. And so I was like, wow, that's kind of sucks. But at the same time, you know, being an individual and being able to say I have a different name and it's unique. And so I actually have come to really appreciate that my parents did not name me what they wanted to name me. There were two choices.
Okay.
And they would laugh about this. Do you know the show Clarissa Explains It All?
Yes, I remember that show.
So they wanted to name me Clarissa and or Cameron. So the fact that they went with Cameron, I was super thankful because Clarissa Explains It All. I was in middle school when that happened. Uh-huh. And so I'm really glad that I was not Clarissa.
Yes.
I also think Cameron fits me a lot better.
It is a beautiful name. And actually, you're the only one I know. I've never met a female Cameron, I should say.
Yeah, that's funny. There are a lot of little girls out there with the name Cameron, but there are also a lot of little boys. And I would say when I was in high school, it was always Mr. Cameron, you know, when you're called at the doctor's office.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's just been a lot of Mr. Huffman.
That's interesting. I have a feeling it opens doors, though, for you because people aren't sure.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you have a nickname?
Growing up, I was called Cam a lot.
Cute.
Yeah. I played softball and volleyball. So now I'm Anti-Cam. Mm. So I'll take that nickname any day.
And congratulations on your new nephew.
Thank you. I actually have a new niece, too. She was born on Tuesday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they're 3 weeks apart. So I have one of my sisters had a little boy and the other had a girl.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
I'm completely smitten.
I can't imagine. I mean, just so many beautiful kids around. Do you help each other out?
So much. My middle sister, who has the two now and had the little boy, she lives about 6 minutes from me on the island. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And my other sister lives in Midtown, but we're all in medical. One's a PA and one's an NP, and then I'm a pharmacist. So we commiserate a lot about insurances and medical things, but yes, we all help each other. I'm actually making a dinner to take to my sister because she's getting discharged.
Oh, today?
Yeah, today.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Is this her first child?
It is her first.
Oh, wow. So is it hard for you with four kids of your own to not say too much and give too much information? How do you handle that?
Yeah. So I found
you know
that,
a lot.
Sometimes I feel like I know nothing. But So with my first sister, or my middle sister, I'm the oldest, and I tried to give her a lot of advice with her first, and it was like I didn't know anything. She was very independent. She's a pediatric NP, so she knows a lot of things about babies and kids, and she's my go-to person if something happens. She's my question answerer. Uh-huh. But I tried to give her a lot of advice, and the pushback was kind of real, so I said, you know what? I'm just going to sit back, and I'll just be here. And so I let them bring, you know, questions to me, and I try to say, like, hey, have you ever thought about this? Or, like, I'll give you an example. I went to see the baby on Wednesday at the hospital, and they're both new parents, you know, neither of them have had any children, and he's a nurse, and she's a PA. And so medical backgrounds, but I said, hey, did they tell you like fold the diaper down so it doesn't like touch the umbilical cord and cause irritation and cause it to fall off sooner than it ought to? And they were both like, no. And so it's just little things like I just try to ask questions more than give advice and just wait for them to ask questions.
Wow, that's such good advice right there, because I feel like it's difficult when you want to help. And
so
you
much.
See there's a reason, like, oh, they may need something. But just like being a mother, even this morning in the car, I'm watching my son. He had, it's funny, he likes to go over his spelling and vocab words on Friday morning on the way to school.
That's smart.
Yeah, that's just
I love
what he
that.
He doesn't study. He looks over his things, but it's cool. That's his system. And it seems to be working. And it's funny. I'm driving. I'm looking over. He's fiddling, trying to get the paper back into the folder without taking the folder out of the backpack, right? And I'm just, and I have this practice where I just look away. I don't give it my attention. I don't try to offer help. I just look out the window and I think of other things to focus on, because that's his situation, right? And unless he's asking, Mom, will you help? Or I don't acknowledge.
Right.
It
and
took
it's our
a
nature.
Long time. It is as a mother you want, right? It's just, it's in our nature. You're right.
Like it's innate.
We feel like we have to, but we don't have to.
Right.
And we shouldn't.
Yeah.
Just, I love your advice too. Just sit back and wait.
Yep.
And if they ask, perfect. Then the door's open for you to just give, which is what all women, I feel, want to do. We want to give.
Yeah.
We
and I try to spend time, you know, like I try to be there for them so that the needs just naturally happen. You know, like, hey, could I change the baby's diaper for you? Or do you want me to hold them so you can take a shower? You know, the things that I appreciated when people did for me as a new mom.
So what advice would you give to a new mom today if she was just coming home from the hospital and she wasn't really sure what to do? Or, you know, what would you tell her? Like, if you could go back in time to your first child, what would you say to her to maybe put her mind at ease that everything's okay or that you can do this? Like, what kind of inspirational or motivational message would you say?
Oh, I would tell her just to give herself grace. Sleep when you can and try to just have a trust that everything's going to happen for a reason and in the right timing, because you can try to manufacture sleep times and you can try to manufacture nap time and you can be so rigid about a schedule that you lose yourself a little bit. Yeah. And I think everybody as a first mom a lot of times does that, especially if you have a type A personality like me. So I was very rigid. And then by baby number four, I'm like, he'll sleep when he sleeps. He'll eat when he eats. You know, you just get to the point where it's not your timing anymore. It's their timing. And you're just kind of along for the ride.
I've said that too. It's you're on the baby's time. And no one really tells you that at the baby shower.
No.
Like, get ready. And I love how you just said, would you consider yourself a type A?
Oh, so much.
Okay. I admire that very much.
I've relaxed a lot.
Yeah.
My sisters, when I first had kids, they both said to me, you got a lot nicer when you had kids.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, was I that difficult? Was I such a pain? Before
really?
Before I had children? Yeah, they both have told me that. So I was like, wow, I've personality-wise shifted.
Really?
Yes.
That's beautiful. And I love your outlook on that too, because you can't micromanage everything. It just doesn't work. These are human beings in your life, and they have their own agenda, and they have their own needs for sleep and food and free time and all of those things.
You enjoy it so much more if you can just learn to relax. Mm. And my baby sister is very,
definitely,
very chill. So she'll probably do just fine with this. But I had a really hard time there.
Wow. Well, you've learned so much.
So much.
I'm sure.
10 years.
Let's talk about your kids a little bit. So you have two girls and two boys.
I do. Right?
Did you find out the sex of the babies before they were born?
I did. Yeah.
Each time?
Each time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was super excited for each one for different reasons. I think I was excited when I found out it was a boy first because I always envisioned having a boy first. And then when Cora, my second, was a girl, I was ecstatic because I was like, oh, gosh, I know girls. I can do girls. Like, I got this. Hair bows. And we subscribed to a bow box. And her and I used to play dress up with hair bows constantly.
That's really cute.
Yes. And then when Ruby, number three, was a girl, I was like, oh, my gosh, a sister. Like, I love my sisters. They're my best friends. So, and then Charlie was the bonus. And I wasn't going to find out what it was. And then Joe and I agreed that we really needed to know. We're just not those kind of people that can sit back, and I admire those people, just kind of hang out and wait. I'm not one of those. So when I found out it was a boy, I was like, oh man, like I just knew it was going to be another girl. I don't know why.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you were surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's the perfect mix.
What are their personalities like, if you could describe them in a few words?
Sure, yeah. So Tripp is my oldest, and he is he's very outgoing, super social. He is the life of the party at school. I think occasionally he gets in trouble for not paying attention and trying to be social, but also he gets his work done. His teachers have told me that. So he's just real easygoing and fun to be around. He's a great kid. They're all good in their own aspects. Cora is the home manager. I would say that she really kind of slid into that, like, first female. I think a lot of first females in a family have a personality, and she totally fits that. She's also an Aries and very in charge. We have similar personalities, so occasionally we butt heads. But she's a doer. She'll get it done. And she's my one. I can always be like, hey, can you please watch Charlie so I can take a shower? Wow. So you don't think about this.
And she wants to?
Oh, like she adores him. Charlie's the best thing that ever happened to her.
Really?
Yes. Ruby was number three, you know, being a girl. Mm. She told my little sister, Mama got a new baby. She was 3 years old.
Oh, no.
I know. It broke my heart. Ruby is my most difficult to motivate. She beats to her own drum. She's independent, but extremely smart. She's in kindergarten, and she reads at a 1.5 level.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did nothing different. They all got the same. Maybe she got a little more relaxed mom, which means I probably read to her less. So I don't believe that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, I love that. Okay, she just gravitates towards books?
She loves books.
Okay.
She loves the library. She asks me to go all the time.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm not a huge reader. I wasn't a reader until I was a mom. And I was like, oh my gosh, a book and an escape. Like, I can have my own time. And then I like to read. But when I was forced to read for pharmacy school and college, and I did not enjoy it. So I can understand how, you know, kids don't like that or whatever. But and then Charlie. Charlie is going to be the class clown. He's two. So we're, you know, learning how to be independent. We want to do everything ourselves. Mm-hmm. But he's so naturally athletic already. He already likes baseball. He already loves to play outside. Like, I could see him being into some sort of extreme sport because he just has no fear.
Wow. Maybe rugby or something?
He terrifies
me. Or ice hockey?
Yeah. He scares me. But
he's like all boy then.
All boy.
That's
all boy.
Great.
Yes.
Did you have natural births with them or C-sections? What did that look like?
Yeah, all natural. Okay. I was induced with my last three. My first one was, I went into labor, but everybody was early. Nobody made it past 38 weeks. So Ruby, I did something kind of dumb. As a pharmacist, I, you know, sell drugs for a living. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of medications that help people. Mm-hmm. I chose not to get an epidural with Ruby after having had two babies with epidurals. And then that was a mistake. So I went back and got my epidural with Charlie.
Oh, that's good.
But I'm glad I did it. And there is a benefit. You know, there are some benefits. Not having an epidural allowed me to get up and walk immediately after having the baby. And so that was cool. You know, I felt much more independent and less, you know, your legs are so asleep after you have the baby. And I just felt like I could do things on my own. It was also my healthiest pregnancy. I had run a marathon right before getting pregnant with her.
Wow.
So, like, awesome. I ran a marathon, like, I don't know, March 20th, and then I got pregnant in May. So I was super in shape. But yeah, they were all very different.
So you didn't have the epidural, which means it was really, really painful?
Being induced and not having an epidural really just doesn't feel fair. You feel everything. Mm. And I know there are so many women out there that have babies in a birth center, and that's amazing. And mm-hmm. I think that is the coolest thing.
Me too.
I do have a good friend who is a birth photographer for me. She's my best friend's older sister. She's a nurse. She's a birth photographer, and she kind of works as a doula. She really helped me get through the unmedicated birth. So I wouldn't say it was it's not doable. If that's something that you decide you want to do, I'm glad I tried it. Wow. But, okay. You know, after having another baby or choosing for the fourth baby, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get that epidural.
Wow. This is great advice too. I've never actually heard anybody say that before, that they've tried both ways.
Really?
No, never. And I think that the system pushes us to get the epidural. Why do they do that? Why do they want us to get the medicine?
I guess because it's available. You know, it's like, you know, in the 50s, there was twilight sleep. And, you know, a lot of moms delivered babies where they don't really remember because of nitrous oxide. That's what they were given.
Oh.
And so, you know, they were able to get through the birth without actually feeling it, although they were medicated, but they kind of weren't. So it's interesting. But I think that our society encourages people to get through things if there's an easier way. Mm. And I'm not saying that getting an epidural makes it an easier way. It's different. And I chose to get it. But, mm-hmm. you know, I just also wanted to know, like, you know, what is this? I did a lot of prep before I had Ruby. I read several birthing books by a couple of midwives. And it gave me mental tools to get through that process.
Wow. I feel like we all need to read more of those books.
Yeah.
That needs to be really just mainstream. I don't know if it is.
A friend of mine, it's so funny, like people are put in your life at the right time, mm-hmm. right? And so my next door neighbor, who had both of her babies at a birth center, also have high blood pressure. So I wasn't allowed to have my babies at a birth center. So that's why I was induced, because of blood pressure problems.
Okay.
But she encouraged my neighbor, encouraged me to breastfeed, and she encouraged me to try things that I don't know if I would have worked so hard if she hadn't been like, you can do this.
Oh, wow.
You know, so like having somebody that believes in you without really even knowing you, but believes in your ability to be a mom and a woman. And she really encouraged me. And she's the one that kind of introduced me to these doula books. And I just don't know that, you know, being trained medically pushes me towards the medical side, but having an open mind and understanding that there are other ways, and alternative medicine is not, it's not a lesser option.
Right. You were very fortunate to have her.
So fortunate.
And you're like, do you still speak with her?
I do. She moved to Columbia, South Carolina, but we go see her. So she comes down, we do a beach week in July every year at Tybee. And so we go and spend a whole week at the beach house, and she comes too, and her two girls.
Wow.
So her girls are the same age as my older two. And then we go to the zoo up there and see her every October, usually October. I think we're going to do November this year. And then we try to go back and forth at least one time in the spring.
Wow.
So probably beautiful. 3 times a year we see each other, but we talk, text, you know, FaceTime, all that.
Well, she came into your life, like you said, at the right time.
Yeah, she did.
And she taught you a lot of things.
Yeah, it was funny. We weren't even friends until the day I was in labor with Trip. And we had moved there. Yeah. We lived there for 10 months before I really introduced myself to her. And I happened to be in labor. And she was like, hey, I know you're having a baby soon. Like, knocked on the door. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm actually having contractions. And, like, she had had her baby 6 months earlier. So she, you know, we talked. And she encouraged me to, you know, push through it. So.
Well, and I think that's the message here, Cameron, is that we, as women, were built for this.
Yes.
And we need to remember that we were given the gift to go through childbirth,
right.
If we're fortunate enough to have that right gift. And you are capable. And yes, there's medicine available.
Mm-hmm.
I also had the epidural twice. But then again, I didn't really do the research. I didn't know there was other options.
Right.
I didn't, at the time, I wasn't as close to a friend of mine as I am now that had the water birth, which she says is like the best experience she's ever had. And
that's
she
cool.
has also 4 kids, but she had one that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's just more, it's just the most important thing is that we're talking about these things and sharing what's available so that you know that there's not just, it's not just one way.
Yeah. And right? I think doctors don't necessarily push you to being or choosing natural. No. I think it kind of stresses them out because it's more risk for them.
Yes.
So I think that that's part of our issue as a society is we're such a litigious society now that anything that involves higher risk is kind of shunned away.
Sure.
So, but I think it is important to note too that, you know, having a C-section doesn't make you any less of a mom.
No.
It doesn't make you any less of, you just had a situation where you couldn't have the baby and both of you survived because of C-sections being available. So I think that that's important to note too.
Thank you for mentioning that. And I hope somebody heard that today. I'm pretty sure they did. That was a beautiful message. I'd love to know. So you did breastfeed all four?
I did.
Okay.
Well, it didn't go great with Trip. So my oldest, it was a rocky road.
How come?
Oh, I would say anxiety. I had so much anxiety and stress over the fact that he wasn't a good latcher. And I have some anatomical issues that caused me to not be the greatest person to breastfeed.
Okay.
I worked through those. There are options, you know, like nipple shields and, you know, there are things that you can get through. But he didn't have a good latch and I didn't know what I was doing. And I hadn't really had anybody in my family. My mom breastfed, but, you know, it had been 30 years or 25 years. And so there wasn't anybody really like close to me at that time other than my neighbor who could encourage me to do that. And I stressed myself out so badly that we got to like month four and my knees swole up and I had to go to rheumatology. And they were like, you're causing yourself so much stress.
Oh,
you're exhibiting an autoimmune disorder. And so they were like, you have two options. You can take an antidepressant or you can stop breastfeeding.
The breastfeeding caused this?
Yeah. It was stress because I had really worked myself up so much that I was causing my own autoimmune disorder. Isn't that insane?
I completely can relate to what you're saying because you felt so alone, right?
Yeah.
And you felt like when you're in charge of a child's well-being and they're hungry and you're responsible for feeding them.
Yeah.
That is like one of the most stressful things. And it doesn't just flow and come natural and no one's there to guide you. Well, you did have a guide, but she wasn't with you all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's incredibly stressful.
We also weren't as good of friends then, you know. And then he was a little bit lazy and he had jaundice. And so that caused him to sleep a lot.
Wow.
And so, like, I just didn't have enough milk. And I just didn't know enough about breastfeeding.
Me either.
And so,
excuse me either. I didn't know.
It's so hard.
It's so hard. And I'm glad that everyone is talking about it more these days. Because
so much.
I didn't even realize that pumping, because I pumped with my son, the same situation as you. I had a difficult time with the latching, didn't really know what I was doing, felt very overwhelmed, felt very alone trying to figure this out.
That's right.
I was getting headaches. And
your husband has no idea.
He has no idea. So the pumping was working, but then I realized that even while you're pumping, you should be holding the baby, looking at a picture of your baby, smelling your baby, all these things. Like if you're in your car or you're at work and you have to, which is what was happening for me, you should always have your senses have to be engaged with your baby. You actually have to hear that. This is a crazy thing too. And I'm guessing that you've had this experience when you're breastfeeding or you're trying to, or you're a woman that's walking around with milk, right? Other babies are crying and you are, you are leaking a little bit.
Expressing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't help it because your body's responding to some child that's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it's your own child and you're trying to feed them, it's like, it's a mind game.
Yeah. It's wild to me that people used to, and I get why they did it, you know, wet nurses and things and now like there are breast milk banks and things that you can contribute to, but there's a lot of rules involved and, you know, no alcohol and, you know, no coffee. And there's a lot of things that go into it because they want to make sure it's safe for the baby. And I totally get that.
I get that too.
But yeah, nobody talks about how hard it is.
No. And it doesn't come natural for every woman. I hope some men out there hear this.
It
does not come natural it didn't come for me.
Me either.
I had no idea what I was doing. It was not natural.
Yeah.
And I struggled with it. I did my best with it both times, both kids I have. I have no regrets. But if I can help someone else in the future, whether it's my own daughter or hopefully someday my daughter-in-law, I'm here to help.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Open book.
And that's what we do. That's what we do as women, right?
Yeah.
We
share.
We share. We help. We're there to support. And
that's right.
And we'll wait for you to ask us. And then we'll show up.
Yeah, we'll try, right?
Cameron and I will be quiet until you ask.
It's hard for us.
Did you have any postpartum with the kids?
Yeah, it was weird. After each one was slightly different. After trip, I had the normal like baby blues, but I think the thing that I struggled most. So at the time, I worked for Kroger Pharmacy, and I traveled a lot. I was a clinical manager, so I covered Myrtle Beach all the way to Waycross, Georgia, and so there were 18 Krogers in between there that I visited and supported in terms of flu shots and diabetes education and just immunizations in general, biometric screenings. I did all of those things, right? So I was pretty busy, and I moved around a lot. And so I had a lot of mom guilt of being away from him. And so that part was kind of hard. And it got better. And then after Cora, I was elated, almost unnaturally. Okay.
Really?
Yes. Very strange. I don't know if it was just because it was nerve wracking. And my sisters will joke. They'll say that I didn't want to be home with both of them. My hardest transition was 1 to 2. And so they,
really? Okay.
Yes. I just felt like everybody needed me at the same time. And I easily get overwhelmed. And so that caused a lot of anxiety and overwhelmed feelings all the time, especially like the first 3 months. But once I went back to work, I took 3 months off with her. And once I went back to work, I felt less mom guilt about being at work and more I want to show my kids what being a powerful businesswoman or pharmacist, in my case, you know, someone who loves their job and goes to it every day willingly, I want to show them what that looks like too. And so it kind of clicked for me a little bit differently with her. And then with Ruby, I felt all of this like fear. I just felt like she was going to die constantly, which
really?
Is not normal.
Where did that come from?
I have no idea. It came from hormones. It came from, you know, just not being, nothing. It came from nowhere, you know, and it took me probably 6 months. It also was COVID, so maybe that's where it came from. And I just haven't really thought about it. She was born January of 2020.
Oh, my goodness. That's a tough time be a baby.
Yeah. I went back to work at a hospital at 9 weeks. I came back 3 weeks early because they asked me to. And they needed the support, and they needed me to be there. So I did. And it was the week that mandatory masking started. So everybody started having to wear a mask. And I dropped off my newborn at a daycare that was open. A private daycare that was open when they could be, you know, CDC shut them down sometimes, but when they could be open, I literally rolled out, dropped her carrier off to her teacher, handed them the breast milk bottles, and kept driving. No, never met her teacher, never got out of the car.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a very wild time. So I think there was just a lot of fear in general. And I think it manifested for me in Ruby's gonna die. And then after Charlie, you know, that was a little bit of a different time. I was going through a divorce. So there was just a lot of sadness. But I don't know that it was really him or postpartum, but the hormones contributed for sure. But he was also my little buddy. You know, he was breastfeeding. So he stayed with me when everybody else went to dad's house, and we transitioned to two households. And it's it takes time and effort. But after a lot of introspection on both of our parts, I think we've figured out the whole co-parenting thing for the moment. Now there are things that come up that we will have to navigate, you know, cars and middle school and all kinds of things. But for the moment right now, we're in a good place.
How did you figure that out so well?
Oh, I think communication, you know, and having to come to a point where you're not afraid of what their reaction's going to be, like just saying what you need. Just being open of this is how I'm feeling and this is what I need and this is what the kids have going on and this is it. Just being very matter of fact and face value, not having an ulterior motive or agenda or, oh, I'm going to not using the kids as pawns. I mean, that's a big thing with
it
divorce.
Is.
You know, it's hard. You have to make sure that you have the kids' best interests at heart always because they're what matters. And I think we both have that. And so we do a really good job of putting the kids first.
Yeah, I'm going to mention this too. I even noticed that you posted a Father's Day post, really, for Joe, your ex-husband, which was just a beautiful tribute. You know, this picture of him with the kids. Excuse me. I don't know a lot of women out there that are doing that.
Yeah, you know.
And I really appreciate that.
He's a great dad.
Yes.
And a good person.
Very much.
And so, you know, it didn't work out between us. That's okay. we have beautiful children together and we have to raise these children and whatever that looks like. So he's a great dad. And I think that it goes, you know, we should recognize people more often than Father's Day or Mother's Day. And he did the same for me on Mother's Day. So I think we both still appreciate each other as people, even if we can't be together.
Yeah. And do you think the kids have processed that?
I think they're working on it. I think there are times where they are settled in the whole two households thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think that there are times where they struggle with it. And I think that's fair. I think there are times where I struggle with it. So, you know, but I do encourage counseling. I set them up with a kids counselor.
Wow, perfect.
And I also talked to the counselor at the school so that they would know and their teachers know, you know, like this happened. And last year when it was happening, we talked to their teachers. And so they could point out if they were having a bad day or, you know, if there was maybe something we should pay attention to outside of school. But I think that my kids have shown resilience because Trip, my oldest, is school council president.
I know, and I love this. I love that you're bringing this up. I mean,
he's proud.
He's so full of life and personality, and he's just such a great, easygoing kid.
Yeah, and he genuinely wants to do the right thing and for the reasons.
Yes.
And so I think that's important.
Very.
And then, you know, and Cora kind of follows in his footsteps. She is her class representative, and she does horseback riding, and she does gymnastics, and she's thriving in most situations. We are doing Girls on the Run together this year, which is interesting. I find that she asks mom a lot of questions, and I'm like, there are other coaches, you know? Like,
right.
So I try to only go to half the practices, actually, and yes, I'm working, and sometimes I'm out of town for work with my job now, and so that's usually why I'm not there, but I think it is beneficial when the coaches tell me, oh, Cora had a great practice. And I'm like, oh, did she say anything about me not being there? And she's like, they're like, no, she knew you weren't going to be there and she was good. And they've noticed like she actually does a little bit better when I'm not there.
Yes.
Which I think is funny, but she wants me there. And that was the whole point of doing the Girls on the Run is I did it before she was involved so that I would know the curriculum and know if it was worth putting her in. And it's absolutely worth it.
Will you talk to us a little bit more about what that is for anyone locally here who doesn't, isn't familiar with it?
So Girls on the Run is a program. It's a national program, and we have a really good one in the state of Georgia and especially coastal South Georgia. Girls on the Run is a curriculum-based program that it teaches girls confidence, and it's for third to fifth graders, and then there's a middle school version also. But we focus mostly on the third to fifth graders, and that's the bigger target audience. Mm. And it focuses, there are scholarships for girls who can't afford it because there is a cost involved.
Okay.
But anybody can participate. And it just teaches girls confidence and to be able to do hard things that they may not think that they can do. And we talk about, I can't do it yet. Mm. And we talk about talking nice to yourself, which I don't think I realized how... somebody said 70,000 thoughts a day, and, you know, over half of them can be negative.
Right.
So, and they can be self-negative. So I think that the program is designed for girls to learn to talk nice to themselves because you're always listening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the program in general. It's, you know, you build up to running a 5K. And it teaches girls that you can have a healthy relationship with working out and with self-thought and confidence and everybody's unique ability. And looking at your partner as or your friend as a colleague and not a competition.
So they pair the girls up?
Not always.
Okay.
We do pair up during practice, but you have to switch partners.
Oh.
Like every 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
So for an hour and a half, you are talking to, there's 22 girls in our group. And so you are going to talk to all the other girls at some point. You're going to learn something about them. You're going to know, yesterday I was at the Girls on the Run practice and one of the girls' moms is having a high risk birth. And so she's in Charleston and she's staying with her grandmom right now. And she refused to run because she's anxious. And I said, totally fair. She's like, my little sister's being born, but I don't know how it's going.
Wow.
So that, that's a big deal.
Very.
And it was cool to be able to be the coach that she gets to talk to about that. So that's, why I do it.
I think that's a great time in a child's life to be a part of something like this.
For
sure. Because
there's
like so many studies being done about the third grade girls and the fourth grade girls and how much bullying is happening and just, the body image things. And it's just...
And that's real.
It's real. Have you experienced that at home?
We just started getting into the body image thing.
What's that like?
Oh, it's so hard because I don't see her the way that she sees her.
Okay.
You know, Cora's 8, and so we've had to kind of bridge the whole. I try to keep her active so that there's, you know, really not a body image problem, right? But I was a chunkier, thicker little girl until, you know, like 8th grade. So from 3rd grade to 8th grade was kind of rough for me. And I don't think that I had the healthiest relationship with food. And so I am very careful. And I did mention, you know, I've told this to my ex-husband before we ever had children. I will never say something negative about my body or how I look in something in front of my girls. I won't do it.
Thank God.
Right?
Thank God.
And my mom wasn't bad about that. But no. She was always on a diet and she was always on Weight Watchers.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
We grew up in the skinny...
We did.
America's Next Top Model age.
Absolutely.
And so it's really hard to not... think about those things. And so I talk about the things that she is good at or the things that she, her hair is different. It's short, right? Because of the genetic hair disorder that, that 3 of my 4 experience, it's called Menilithrix, but, they don't have a ton of hair. And so she looks at her other friends and they're like, why do you have a boy haircut? You know, kids can be really mean.
Well, they're just being observant. They don't understand.
They don't.
So what does she say? What do your kids say about that?
It's funny, the hair thing. We've taught them, you know, God made you the way that you are. And you can have whatever reaction feels comfortable to you. I try not to pigeonhole them into a reaction. I tell them, you know, you're loved and you're beautiful the way that you are. And if people have a problem with it, then don't be friends with them. Tell them to leave you alone and you walk away. Because you don't have to hear that. You don't have to listen to it. You don't have to be friends with them. You're not going to like everybody, but you will respect your colleagues.
Yes.
So I always tell, and I tell this to people I work with, when there's a, you know, 2 people in a pharmacy that don't get along, I say, you do not have to be friends, but you will respect each other when you're in this space. And so I try to teach my kids that because that's how they need to act in a work environment at some point in their life, right? But the hair thing, they, you know, Cora's comfortable with her haircut. I actually took her and Ruby, one of their babysitters works at a hair salon downtown, and she was an apprentice, and now she has her own chair.
Uh-huh.
And so she's doing hair herself. Mm. And she's new in her career, so she said, you know, hey, I'm doing these back-to-school blowout specials. And she's like, I know your girls don't have a ton of hair, but would you like to have them come in and we'll do like a scalp treatment and like,
wow,
you know, wash their hair and let them feel pampered. And I said, absolutely. So I took the girls and we did that. So we try to do things, and Ruby is hitting that age. She's 5. So she's hitting that age where she's like, why don't I have long hair? So she's just kind of starting to understand.
To ask. And Trip has this same.
Trip has it too, but
okay.
Boys are easier. You know, there's only been 1 incidence at school, and I think the school does a really good job of just baseball has helped here, too, because his baseball buddies have his back. You know, they're never going to let another boy say something negative to him because Tripp is lucky that he's a good kid, and he has a good personality, and so it's easy to like him and hard to dislike him, even for the hair. Right?
Yes.
So he's got his baseball buddies. So he's just really cruised through it. Now, middle school may get trickier because it's a new environment. It's different fish in the sea. And we may have to address it. But it also helps him that his dad has it. So he has somebody to relate to and look up to in that manner. And he can see how successful and happy his dad is.
Yes.
And so it just feels natural to him.
Do you sometimes feel like you want to take the pain away from them when they're struggling with that?
Yeah, I did at first, for sure.
You did. You just take it on yourself.
Well, you can't really take
it
from them.
No, you can't, because you have a beautiful head of hair.
Right. So much hair.
Yeah,
it's just hard, you know.
It's
and then the baby, who's a boy, has all this hair. He has my hair. And so I was like, really? And so honestly, I just had to be like, I don't know what your reason is, God, but I'm going to go with it. So there's a reason. I don't know what that is yet, but it's building resilience.
That's,
you know,
really, really beautiful. That's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Because as a mom, when your kids are different in any way, right? If it could be a hair thing, it could be a skin thing, it could be a height thing, it could be... I remember when my daughter, I think it was like her first day of like 2nd or 3rd grade, and I got a call from the principal's office that day. It was her first day of school. And the principal said, your daughter's here because she was making fun of a girl here that has a disfigured finger or something. Like, she had like smaller fingers or shorter fingers on the one hand. And I said, well, what happened? And the principal said, well, she was asking questions about it. And the little girl's very embarrassed. And we're going to keep her here, you know, or you can come pick her up and we'll talk about it further. So my issue with that was, well, my daughter's young. She didn't know. I'm sure she didn't mean to offend the little girl. But how about we talk about it? How about the little girl's mom comes in and we have a conversation in front of the class even, like, hey, this is what she's dealing with, or this is what's happening. It's not a secret.
Right.
You're all little kids. You all notice this is different, right? Her hand looks different than yours. But there's a different, I think there's other ways to approach these things.
Sure.
They didn't want to hear that. I think eventually the girl just switched to a different school.
Oh, boy.
So that didn't happen.
But yeah, I think pointing out the uniqueness in yes. everybody in life is something that we've gotten better at.
Yes.
But we're still not there.
And we're curious. And I think kids especially are curious. Like, yes. we even this morning there was a TV show on. My son was watching it. And there was a little person on the show. He goes, Mom, is he small? I said, yes, he's a little person. He's a full grown man. He's just a smaller person. There's all different shapes and sizes of humans, right? And
right.
It's good to ask these questions. There's no shame in you asking about that, because for us to say, almost like gaslighting, like, oh, you didn't actually see that. That didn't really happen. Or that person's completely normal, just like you. Or, well, no, we're all a little bit different in some way.
Yes.
And I love that you're giving your kids that empowerment to answer the question their way.
Yeah.
And to feel good about, hey, this is me.
Right.
And if you have any questions, I'll answer them.
Yes.
It's okay.
I told Ruby, I think, you know, she's getting to the point where she may want to choose to wear a wig. And so I said, you know what? We may have to, we may go to a wig store and you can try them on and figure out what you think you want to wear. And she said, can I have a pink sparkle wig? And I said, girl, you can have any wig you want.
I love this.
Yeah. So we're, you know, and maybe she chooses to wear a wig and maybe she doesn't. Well, I don't know yet. So
maybe she'll have 10 or 20 of them. And that would be so fun.
It was funny. Her concern was, well, if I have a pink sparkle wig and then the next day I have a brown wig, what are people going to say? Which was funny to me. And I said, you know, they might ask about it. I said, what would you say? And she said, I changed my hair. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think that's a great answer.
Exactly. And how many kids would like to do that themselves?
Exactly.
Like, oh, I want to have wigs like Ruby does.
How many times did you want straight hair or curly hair?
All the time. I wish my parents would have bought me a wig just to have fun with it.
It would have been cool. It
would have been very cool. I love this. Well, hang tight, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Cameron's upbringing. I'd love to hear a little bit about your early years. Hang tight.
The exhibit, Stay a While, Interiors in Art, continues at the Telfair Academy of Art into April 2026. This exhibit encourages visitors to thoroughly ponder the depth of artistry, form, and detail of these depictions of interior settings. Paintings, drawings, and photographs feature a variety of views of the indoors. More information can be found at www.telfair.org. The exhibit, A Decade of Collecting Photography, 2015 to 2025, will run through January 4th at the Jepson Center. The Telfair Photography Collection has expanded by over 700 photographs in the last 10 years, with an emphasis on photographic innovation, women photographers, photojournalism, and post-Civil War photography along River Street. Ultimately, this exhibition is a celebration of photography and its powerful presence in our culture.
You're listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you, people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other Savannah residents. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So, won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air? Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, you can support your local radio station at WRUU.org. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tim, the host of a show called Not Fade Away here on WRUU. Do you like the feeling of, oh wow, I love this song and I haven't heard it in forever? Then join me on Friday afternoons from 1 to 2 p.m. I play forgotten hits and songs that were good enough to have been hits but never made it. Let's keep great music alive together. Not Fade Away, Fridays at 1 p.m. here on WRUU. Hi, I'm Tim, the host of a show.
Welcome back, everybody, to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I'm here with the one and only Cameron Huffman. Cameron, can we talk about your upbringing for a moment?
Sure.
What was that like? Give us a little idea or shine a light on your childhood home and what was going on. Did you grow up here in Savannah?
I did, yeah. Okay. So I grew up in Savannah. Both of my parents are still together. They're disgustingly in love with each other still.
Wow.
I have two little sisters. Uh-huh. So I'm the oldest. I was four and they were one and newborn. So we're all real close together. I attended a private school here in Savannah, and I would play softball on the weekends and volleyball, and I love Savannah. You know, it's funny, I didn't know how much I would miss it until I chose to go 5 hours away for undergrad, because my parents are pretty conservative. I'll get into that a little more in a second, but I chose to go 5 hours away from home and still get the Hope Scholarship. So I stayed in Georgia, but I went to North Georgia in Dahlonega. And then missed Savannah incessantly for the first semester being away. But my parents were great. They are very much do-it-yourselfers. They remodeled an 1889 farmhouse from the time I was 10 until I was 13. Our home was always happy. We were always learning different things. Now, that doesn't mean my parents didn't, you know, get into it every now and then or have disagreements. But they were, my dad is a hugger, and that used to drive me insane.
Really?
Yes. I am really not a super touchy-feely person. Yes. Having kids kind of changed that a little bit for me. My mom isn't a super huggy-touchy person. Mm-hmm. She likes her space. She's kind of likes her own bubble. But my mom is probably the one person that I feel like I could tell anything to. She's great about that. My dad, I talk to him every day. And that kind of started during COVID when I had to go back to work after Ruby was born. I was sad.
Wow.
And I would ride in the car and I drove an hour and I hated it. So I'd talk to him while I was driving. And, you know, gosh, 5 years later, we still talk every day, almost every morning. I joke, but they have Ring cameras at my house because I moved in to take care of my granddad a couple years ago, and then he's since passed away, but I still live in the house. So we had a ton of Ring cameras so that we could see, like, when people were coming, and he had dementia, so he was not a good historian, right, on who was coming and going. So we needed to know what was happening. But my dad put up all these Ring cameras. And so now he checks on me in the mornings. He's like, oh, she's in the kitchen. And so it just showed, you know, he's just very involved. They watched my kids last night so that I could go to a pharmacy dinner. My parents are integral.
Wow. You're so lucky. Really, honey. I can tell you appreciate them. And your dad answers every day when you call?
Usually, okay. If he doesn't answer, he sends me a text that says, hey, I'll call you right back.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So beautiful. Did you always have that close relationship with him before 2020?
Yeah. We're very much alike. Yeah.
That's beautiful. They're very lucky to have you, too. And the grandkids. So many grandkids.
Yes. They just hit number 7.
Oh, wow.
I feel like I contributed a lot to that scenario.
Yes, so. You did. Yeah, you did the bulk of the work.
My sisters need to catch up, really, if we're being honest.
Yeah, you've been honest. Carrying that weight.
But no, I was always, our families have always been real close. And so we did, I couldn't imagine a time where there would be a family function or birthday that, like, my aunt wasn't there or my cousins and my grandparents on both sides, all very involved. And everybody lived in Savannah, except for one aunt and uncle who live in Jacksonville, which is not far at all. So we were all really blessed to have a ton of support and presence.
That's incredible. And it's just such a beautiful message today in the world to hear that your parents are so happily together still and so involved still. And that's a choice. You know, it's a choice to make every day as a grandparent, as a parent, how you're going to show up or
for
not.
Sure.
And I mean, wow. Congratulations to them. Thank you to them for showing up like they do. Would you share one surprising thing that people don't know about you?
Ooh, surprising thing that people don't know about me. Oh, gosh. I have a ton of imposter syndrome.
Oh.
yeah. Yeah. I always feel like I'm not not where I want to be or not at the level that people seem to see me at. So that's been something, you know, kind of struggling through that a little bit. But I think that surprises people because outwardly I seem pretty confident.
Very. Yeah. And, in a good way, though.
Yeah, yes. And I think a lot of times you fake it till you make it. And I say that to my kids all the time. Mm. So definitely surprises people. Other than that, you know, I'm pretty open about myself. And so I don't know that I could really shock anybody with anything that I would say. I have no musical talents. I attempted to play the flute once in middle school and high school, and I felt like it was an epic failure.
I'm with you, girl. I tried to play the flute, and it just didn't come naturally for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to do it either.
Yeah. No, I don't know that there's really anything. Mm. I was a sorority girl. I don't know if that.
Oh, that's
it's
cool.
It's not really surprising. I think that I enjoy female presence, and people understand, like, people know that about me. So, yeah, right. I don't know.
Well, thanks for trying to answer that. That was a tough question.
It is tough.
What's your favorite travel ball walk-up song, if you can think of one?
Oh, man. gosh. I like, actually, it's funny. I liked, was it Jackson that played Barbie Girl?
Oh, my goodness.
That
yes.
one was my favorite. And it surprised me to no end.
Yes, yes.
Because that is so, I did not see that from him.
No.
He's so serious and he takes balls so serious and he's such a good ball player.
Yes.
And then to walk up to Barbie Girl, I was like, yes, take me back. Because I love that song.
Me too.
So that kind of surprised me.
That's a great one. My gosh, I love it. I love the walk-up songs myself, too.
It's fun.
What's it like being a baseball mom? I mean, I am one, too, so I share that with you. But for anyone out there who doesn't know, what is your takeaway from just hanging out in the stands and watching? And
I don't think there's anything I wanted to be more than a baseball mom.
It's beautiful.
Seriously.
Really?
Yeah. No, I love baseball.
Me
I
too.
Love the Braves. I grew up, I spent every summer with my grandparents in Milledgeville at Lake Sinclair. They had a house, and that's where they would go and spend their summers when they were retired. And so they would let us come, all their grandkids. And so I spent a lot of time up there. By myself with just them, and my granddad would listen to the Braves game every night as he would fall asleep. And so I fell asleep every summer listening to the Braves game on the radio.
Really?
And so I love listening to a baseball game on the radio. So I just, and you know, playing softball growing up, and I didn't do it in college, but that was a choice. You know, I probably could have tried, but I just didn't want, it's a job in college. And I didn't, you know, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something that I had never done before. So I just never wanted to be anything more than a baseball mom. And it's just fun watching your kid do something that they love. And that could be anything. Like,
yeah,
my daughter does gymnastics, and I never thought that I would have, she loved cheer and gymnastics and horseback riding. And now I rode horses growing up some. My mom is big into horses, and so she shared that love with us. But I never thought that I would be a cheer gymnastics mom either. And, Cora and Ruby both love gymnastics, so it's a new world. I like experiencing things that they like, even if it's not what I'm into, because I get to see all the reasons they love it.
Oh, I love that, too. That's a great perspective.
Yeah.
Because they're not like us. A lot of times, they're completely the opposite of us.
Yeah.
And we have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's more fun.
It's so much fun when they discover something new.
For sure.
And then you just get behind that. You know, it's like, oh, I'll support that. I'll be there to cheer you on.
Yeah.
I'll wear your number on my back. So fun.
Yes. My mom always wore the softball button that had our name and number on it.
Really?
And so I need to get one because I think that those are the things I remember. Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. You know, so I always, and they never missed a game. So I always want to, I try hard to do that. Now with four, you know, it's funny. Tripp and I just had this conversation last night. He was very aware of how many tournaments I've been to and how many I have not.
Okay.
And so, somebody has to watch the other three kids, and they don't necessarily want to spend all day at the ball field.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be hard. And so Tripp and I have had a conversation about it's okay if mom catches one or two games a tournament and then has to take, you know, the two-year-old back home because he's filthy and had enough of the ball field.
Yes.
So I think sometimes he struggles a little bit with being the oldest, and I want to be there to watch the games, but, you know, I can't pay for a sitter every weekend.
No, and there's only one of you.
Yes, I think that's the hardest part about having four, is there is only one of me. And I say that all the time to them, and I don't know that they really get it.
No, I don't think so.
but I mean, I'll be bathing one and the other one, you know, needs something to eat or something to drink. And the older two, I'm like, you guys got to help. And that's the one thing that I feel like sometimes is a little bit unfair to older children is they have to help. But yes, it also teaches them some responsibility. So I think there's pros and cons. But trying to make each one feel seen is the hardest part of four. So I try to do dates with them.
Oh, wow. This is so good. I want to hear more about that. We have 5 more minutes. Please share a little bit about what that looks like with the individual time with each kid.
Yeah. So I try to do it. We try to do like once a month or every other month, mm-hmm, where I just take one of them. And my ex-husband does it too with them. We each try to take a turn where one of them gets our undivided attention for about 2 hours. And so like with Trip, we went to Bogey's and we played air hockey.
Is that what he wanted to do?
He wanted to do. I let them pick.
Oh, I love.
Yeah. So we played air hockey and mini golf and it was a good time and ate pizza. And then Cora wanted to do, what did we do with Cora? I'm trying to remember. I think we got our nails done this last time. We've done shopping where we went to TJ Maxx. Ruby really just wanted like my time. She didn't care what we were doing. So we did some like, I don't know if you've seen the little dye painting things you can do with the jewels. She wanted to do that. So we did that one night. We're just a couple hours where it's just me and her doing the dye painting and we're just sitting there talking or watching a show or whatever that looks like. Charlie hasn't participated yet because he gets more of my undivided attention than anybody else, but he'll get his time.
So is this an every week thing?
Or? Oh, no. We try to do it like once a month, every other month, just because we're busy.
Yes.
You know, Monday nights there's gymnastics for two, you know, times two drop-offs and pickups, and baseball for one drop-offs and pickups. And that's every Monday and Wednesday. So, and then Girls on the Run is Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we're just, it's nonstop activity season.
Do you have more free time than you used to now that you're a single mom, even though you have 4 kids?
Yeah, because we do 50-50. Mm-hmm. I do actually get more time to myself, which is interesting.
It is.
So I'm training for another half. I run when I'm, that's my mental health aspect of life. I run to keep myself grounded and to try to train for something. You know, it helps me to have a goal in order to push myself or to get up every day at 5 or whatever that looks like. Now, I don't get up every day at 5. I don't want to lie to anybody.
Setting that bar high.
Right? No. Monday through Thursday, I try to get up every day at 5. And then Friday mornings, I let myself sleep till 6:30. So, you know, it's balance, right?
Wow. You do it very well.
Some days are better than others.
Do you have a mantra or a spiritual quote that guides you or helps you along that you could share?
Yeah, you know, I've always done, I've always said, don't put off for tomorrow what can be done today. And I just try not to procrastinate. Because when I get behind is when I feel overwhelmed and then I don't show up authentically or well for my kids. So I am a night before prepper. I pack lunches at night. I do everything as I can the night before, but I also try to get in bed between 9 and 10 because I'm not a happy night person. I know that I'm better in the morning. So I, you know, if I have to leave things, I will, but it always eats at me and I don't sleep as well. So I've just tried to be prepared. You know, I guess I could be the best Boy Scout motto ever, you know? Yes. That's their motto, right? Be prepared.
Yes, be prepared. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great, I mean, it's a great message for everybody out there. And don't put it off. If there's something that's calling you and you need to do it, then just do it so you can be at peace.
Right.
So we have 2 more minutes. I'd love to know, what does being a mother mean to you? If you could put that into a few words.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. I didn't think that I wanted to be a mom before I had kids. And now I can't imagine not being a mom. So I think that being a mom to me is part of my identity now. You know, I am Trip, Cora, Ruby, and Charlie's mom. And just as much as I am a pharmacist. So I think it's just part of my identity. And it's the never ending, you know, everybody needs something, but it's also the most rewarding thing. Mm. You know, the little, hey, mom, can you hold my hand? Or, hey, mom, you know, guess what I did at school today? It's just the investment in somebody else and the greater good of society.
Yeah. Well, you do it well, like I said, and we admire you. Everyone that knows you does. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having
me. Being so open and beautiful and kind and insightful. I hope everybody enjoyed this as much as I did and hope to see you guys this time next week on Parenting Room 101.